This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Kusu Chuang and Melissa Idris. It's a Friday the 6th.
Hello, good morning.
Might not sound as ominous as Friday the 13th, but I...
That's next week.
Oh, Friday, it is, isn't it?
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, there you have it. No World Cup results today because no games were played, but... In a continuing saga, a kind of side story to the World Cup, that team, football team of teens from Thailand and their coach still in the headlines because getting them out, extracting them from that cave is actually quite a trick. And as the weather approaches, things are looking pretty dodgy.
Yeah.
Not dodgy, like kasihan, right?
No, dodgy in the sense. It means, they run some real risks at this point in time.
Oh,
because
that's
if you remember, for those divers to get through the cave, it took them about 6 hours. And those are professional divers, cave divers.
What oxygen tanks last for 6 hours?
Well, and there's oxygen apparently in the cave. So
but then how do you replenish?
In the water. We're talking about the water, right? The diving aspect of it. So one of the big issues has been how to train the boys to be able to do this task. Mm. I'm sure they'd be accompanied by the professional divers. But absolutely. It's not only the tank issue, because you're right, it's an extraordinarily long time. The issue would be their ability to navigate and last that long. So, everybody's coming up with as many ideas as they can, apparently, at this point in time. They're trying to pump out the water, but the rains have just started.
Okay. Well, there's also some breaking news, guys, that Scott Pruitt has resigned as the head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. Apparently, he wrote a letter to Donald Trump and he cited unrelenting attacks on himself and his family. So if you remember, Scott Pruitt was a Trump appointee and he was a very controversial choice to be heading the Environmental Protection Agency.
I mean, you might not care much about American politics. So the attacks on Scott Pruitt, not as interesting as attacks on this South African rhino poacher. He's been eaten by lions.
Really?
Yes.
Eaten by lions.
A bit of poetic justice there. Lions ate a rhino poacher on a game reserve.
Now, okay. Wow, that's karma news.
That's something everybody can relate to.
Okay, sorry, I do want to come back and justify why I think it's important that we look at what happens with the EPA in the US, because largely everything the US does impacts for the environment impacts the rest of the world. So, yes, as a citizen of the world, I will be looking at who is going to be heading the EPA next.
I tell you, on the issue of the environment, my contribution to the story is Arnold Schwarzenegger on Instagram TV, and he's speaking in his Terminator voice, and he's saying that, basically berating Donald Trump for trying to revive a coal industry. And I think one of our producers is nodding his head vigorously, trying to revive a coal industry which has been left behind. And he says it's a bit like going back in time to the 2000s when Blockbuster, the video chain, was still alive, and it's like going back in time saying, let's block Netflix and let's revive Blockbuster because we think Blockbuster is a great idea. Or at least he thinks. Well, that's the essence of the Schwarzenegger
video. That's the essence of Donald Trump.
Terminator voice, is it?
That's hilarious.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
No, I think what we should be able to do is boil Donald Trump down, extract his essence and bottle it.
Why would you want to do that? Just boil the guy.
Well, that would not be fair to him and his supporters. Okay, we'll be back with a look at idiomatic expressions that just might not translate. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, George Harrison with Give Me Love. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Kusu Chuang and Melissa Idris. Giving me love this morning because it's a Friday. And, you know, there's nothing better than a Friday to make you feel good about the world because we're going into a weekend. It's not a long weekend, but it's a weekend.
We feel so optimistic about the world on a Friday, right? Like anything could happen over the next few days.
Yeah, and we intend things to happen, and that's why, you know, we call it a weekend, because the weekend is a time to contemplate life, I think, and also enjoy yourself to the hilt.
I spend most Sunday afternoons contemplating my navel, ruminating about the world's fortunes. No, I don't.
I know you carry the burdens of the world on your shoulders, just big shoulders that you have. Chuang, that nobody can see because this is radio, not television.
Thankfully.
But yeah, thankfully. Now, okay.
But for Melissa Idris.
That is an idiomatic expression, you know, the shoulders. Now, you know, in recent times, we've had some very inventive attempts to translate Malay idiomatic expressions into English. And because a very famous one was by the Transparency International chief, Akbar Satta,
who's been on here before,
who took a Malay idiomatic expression and turned it into English. He said,
and I'm going to quote him, he said, as Mark Twain once said, clever, clever squirrel jump, one day fall to the ground also. Which, to the delight of many and to the amusement of many on social media. I think the presenters on Astro Wani, when he said that, broke out giggling. There were, you could hear the sniggering in the background and the giggles. So, of course, that got us thinking about how some idiomatic expressions get lost in the translation. Because there's just no way to translate these beautiful phrases in Malay into English.
Well,
there are tons of examples, right?
Yeah, yeah, there are many examples. In fact, just last night on Twitter, there was a cheeky one. And with because there was an image of a politician or the wife of a former prime minister who shall not be named. And the wife of a former prime minister. So. And she's you know, with somebody else in the photo frame. And the person tweets out, sure got prawn behind rock. Which, you know, which is because the Malay expression udang di sebalik batu, which means there's something, there's a kind of hidden agenda, you know, there's something that we don't know but we think is going to happen, and it's you know, it's behind there, it's kind of not in full view. And so, and I thought that was really funny, and I thought I'm wondering to myself whether people are starting to use these translations both to make a point, because the expectation is people actually understand the original. Yeah, right. Yeah. So you say sure got prawn behind rock, and then the person reads it knows the Malay expression.
Well, one of my favorite Malay expressions, which is, I don't think, not on this list, but it's people, you know, calm people who are not ruffled easily, or calm, you know. So the expression is orang yang macam lembu kenyang, right?
So they,
the
right translation to that in English would be a full cow, right? Or a cow's just been fed.
So do you use that?
You know, you meet some people, right? And they're just one of those contented people with a loopy smile on their face, and nothing phases them.
Oh, gosh.
And they're I've never heard that expression.
I've never heard that.
Okay, we're gonna tweet out a link to a list of idiomatic expressions.
Sure, but you know, and then some of the, I mean, why don't you help us translate it? For instance, you know, frog under the shell of the coconut shell.
Katak di bawah tempurung.
That's right.
So what does that mean in English?
Parochial.
Yeah, no worldview. Insular. Yeah.
Sounds like Americans.
What about little, long, long become hill?
That can be translated in English as well, right?
Yeah, little, long, long become hill.
That is English. Chuang, I don't know. What?
Sorry.
That's not Malay, that's English. Little. So, sikit, daddy bouquet, you see. So, that is the expression.
Good Lord.
Now, okay, so one thing it clearly does do is, it is funny. I mean, I think these expressions are extraordinarily funny. And you know, in these instances, people actually do know the meaning. So the meaning goes, but I mean, maybe the seriousness of it doesn't.
Are there no English words or English expressions that can, you know, be used in lieu of this? Should we just use it in Malay, and then people in Malaysia know exactly what we mean?
Well, I have a Malaysian friend who lives in a town called Saffron Walden in the UK. He's actually Indian Malaysian, right?
I thought that was here.
Saffron.
Sorry, Saffron Walden. Okay,
saffron is in the color saffron.
Yes, that's right. Upper crust English village, right? And he misses
Sounds
Malaysia
like he's
so
got a lot
much.
Of vindaloo there.
Yeah, but no, he's the only one of the only few. Okay, and he goes around his golf club. He's got a bit of money, right? He goes around the golf. He speaks in Malay phrases and Hokkien phrases and Minglish phrases, and he expects the English people to pick up from that. And over time, it's happened. So
what a trendsetter!
Yeah. So he goes around. He doesn't speak in an English accent. Speaks in completely, you know, downtrodden Malaysian accent. Speaks in Malay. Speaks in Minglish. Speaks in Hokkien. And he gets away with it because he's just now being looked upon as a bit of a weird anomaly. But he's friends. He's a friendly guy.
Yeah. I think about the thing about this is that if you're on Twitter, people are quite inventive and people with the language more. And so it's not, they're not Dewan Bahasa and Pustaka kind of Malay, right? People are, and I remember that this wonderful expression somebody used, palsuport. And actually it was palsu, as in palsu, as in fake passport. So fake passport wow. became false support. You know, and people do that all the time on social media, and it really generates creative expressions, and I love it. And so, you know, when I see things like this, I think, oh my goodness, you know, people are having a bit of fun, maybe at the expense of the grammar and you know, and
the
all
English
that.
But you know, there's been so much hand wringing over the use of language these past couple of days. The use of BM, the use of English. When is it appropriate? When is it not appropriate? Who can speak it?
I saw
but
those.
But I love that we can kind of just meld these things together.
Absolutely.
So many people on Twitter have pointed out, look, you know, whatever you feel about English or Malay, there are some beautiful words and phrases you just can't deny in both languages. Someone pointed out to me the other day, sayang is the most beautiful word in Malay.
It is.
That is, you know, so many meanings, but you just can't translate the depth of that word into English. It's
That's
beautiful.
Right.
And also we have a wonderful history of kind of linguistic and cultural hybridity. I mean, if you think of the patois that spoke by...
The patois that is spoke.
This spoken is Sharon, by you know, the Baba Nyonyas of yes. the peninsula. Yes. Yeah? Hokkien and Malay. What a wonderful combination.
The lingua franca of the landscape.
No, you just made that one up.
No,
okay. Okay, we'll be back. We'll look at nephews and nieces. And most importantly, the aunts that provide their meaning in life. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Fleet Foxes with He Doesn't Know Why. I'm Sharad Kutin. Kusu Chuang knows why. And so does Melissa Idris. But Melissa Idris is not a he.
That was random.
Because the song, the title of the song is He Doesn't Know Why.
Oh,
you know,
but she doesn't. Oh, but she does know why.
She does. She does. And you know who very wise often? Very wise in a family? Aunts. Mm. And I think there is something about the particular relationship that aunts have with their nephews and nieces. Not with their own children, but with their nephews and nieces, which is where they are aunts.
Why
that makes
this,
them very special.
Why did this story come about? Because it's kind of like a gross generalization, isn't it? What if you had like a really good uncle and, you know, the uncle
Well, I don't think... Okay, so you're absolutely right. The story came to our attention because it was a post on... post.com and it was kind of putting forth why aunts are important in their nieces and nephews' lives, and you know, kind of just explained all the different roles that aunts play in children's lives, you know, spoiling them, being there for them, but really not having that kind of parent-child relationship. And it got us thinking about the role of the extended family. First, when we saw this article, we thought, well, what about the good uncles out there? You know, the role of uncles, they play a role too. But also, in general, what about extended family, right? Because it has a different dynamic. So the grandparent and the grandchild, you know, you're able to spoil them and then hand them over when they're crying, but hand them back to the parents. What's the role of an extended family?
Well, for Spider-Man, it mattered, right? Because he had Aunt Thingy, right? I can't remember the name. Aunt Lucy or something.
Sorry, who?
Spider-Man.
You mean the very fictional character Spider-Man?
Which is great. You mean it's not true? It's got to be true.
Well, you know, I do think I think they're gross generalizations.
Dennis the Menace had an aunt who's also very...
Why are all your references fictional?
I don't know, and they're all as well.
Well, fiction comes from real life, right? And so
art imitates life, and life imitates art
sometimes.
What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, personally, you know, I have an experience of very accomplished aunts, right? So they're professionals and all that. But what I think the role they played in our lives is often as people invested in us as individuals and on a very granular fashion, where the uncles were, you know, are also kind of interesting individuals, but much more abstract and distant. Mm. Whereas, you know, if I look back at my childhood, it was the aunts that, you know, taught us how to make candles and how, you know, got us organized to put up the Christmas tree, for instance,
right.
And played games. And so they were much more invested in our lives. And because they're not our parents, there was no pressure to make us conform to anything in particular. You know how it is about aunts and uncles. They can be different from your parents. They don't have to take on that the same burdens. And therefore, it's much more playful. It's much more open. You're more likely to, I think, confess your inner secrets to an aunt than you are to your mother.
Well, there you go. Yeah. See, in a nutshell.
Well, I am an awesome aunt, says my only niece.
A self-praise, no praise.
Yeah, she says I'm an awesome aunt. She's 4 years old, and I've done the past 4 years is just spoil her silly, much to the detriment of my sister and her husband.
I'm sure they'll appreciate this.
You know what? I also can be an awesome uncle. All I need to do is just buy a year's supply of Cadbury, right, and just give it to them.
I sneak her chocolate and candy when the parents aren't looking. So if she doesn't get dessert, then she'll come to me and say, Auntie Mimi, can I get some?
Auntie what?
She can't say L, Mimi. So she can't say Melly, so she says Mimi.
Mimi. Yes. English.
Yeah, Mimi.
She's British.
Yeah, you know, I have two nephews, and I must say, I've always played the role of a distant, abstract, figured to be respected kind of uncle. Though I've done the distant thing. I can't get them to respect me, though. I mean, I don't think they think my life is that interesting, or at least as interesting as I think it is.
When I listen to you in night school, I think you're distant and abstract as well. But when I meet you in real life, you're actually quite warm and fuzzy.
I am warm and fuzzy, and unfortunately getting fuzzier with age. I just mean the fuzziness of the borders.
Well, speaking of borders, you know that lovely Malay phrase as well, bunchit. You can't really translate bunchit, can you?
What about pot belly?
Pot belly, yeah, but pot belly is
a bit
pubbish, you know. Bunchit is nice and quite quaint as well.
But also very cute sounding,
also very cute,
right?
Yes, right? It's non-offensive.
Okay, weigh in on this question of language. You put it out that idiomatic expressions that don't translate. But you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 0187898899.
I also like bean forget skin.
Bean forget skin. Okay.
Kacang lupakan kulit. Come on, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You knew that.
I knew that.
Okay. We are going to be coming up to the first bulletin of the morning and taking us there. The Chemical Brothers with Let Forever Be. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Bob Marley and the Wailers with I Shot the Sheriff. Okay, so one of the things that the former Prime Minister of Malaysia did do when he governed was that he introduced this idea of putting the number one against just about everything. So the country's name was One Malaysia. Well, not one, not the country's
the,
name.
Not the name, the, I guess that, what would you call it? The slogan, the tagline, yeah. The hashtag.
This came, I think, about because one, apparently, is his lucky number.
But also to promote unity, right? The idea that we are one. So, you know, having this One Malaysia program to promote unity, now, according to the former Prime Minister, he said that it backfired, and it was in fact the reason why his relationship with Dr. Mahathir soured in his claims. So he said that Dr. Mahathir was not happy with some of his projects and policy decisions, particularly in using the One Malaysia, I guess, slogan.
Well, the most famous one is the One MDB, isn't it?
Mm.
And then, of course,
well, then
a whole
it became
bunch
everything,
of
right? So, substituting the I for a one. So, everything from Prima became the one. I mean, what else can you guys think? Brim became a one. Crim.
Crim.
Every,
cream.
Okay. Every I became
Prima,
a one.
Prima. Yeah.
Now, coming back, you know, on a more serious note, I'll kind of explain the narrative that's being spun by Najib Razak and his supporters as to what actually has happened over the last couple of years, you know, what led to Dr. Mahathir making a break from UMNO and, in fact, taking a bit of UMNO's support with him and therefore allowing the then federal opposition, the Pakatan Harapan, to take power at the last polls. It's very interesting that he should latch on to the One Malaysia as the reason, because that's the least substantial, argument that you might imagine, right? You could argue that Dr. Mahathir broke with Najib, yes, over policy perhaps, but more importantly, over questions of governance.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a red herring, which is another phrase, I think, from Najib, because obviously it's not about
ikan merah.
Yes, ikan merah, right? It's not about that. It's about the fact that governance was trespassed and, you know, money was stolen, right?
Absolutely.
Very quickly, Sharad, I do want to give a shout out to Mahmoud Hisham, who weighed in on, you know, that tweet that I mentioned earlier from Roland about letting the cough loose at the tangga. So Hisham is saying, Mahmoud Hisham is saying that batuk di, seperti melepaskan batuk di tangga is not cough batuk, but batuk in this context is the coconut shell used to cedok water to wash your feet. What is cedok? This is an English word. To scoop up water or to just take water to wash your feet before you enter the house. So that's spelled B-A-T-O-K. Thank you so much for correcting us there. I had no idea.
And neither did I. And we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Aretha Franklin with a Good Times. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Melissa Idris and Kusu Chuang. And we're having a good time with idiomatic expressions this morning.
That's right. So we're asking, idiomatic expressions, do they translate across languages? We're sharing our favorite ones. Shwer got prawn behind rock is a crowd favorite this morning. Thank you, everyone, for weighing in. Sheikh Shahril just tweeted in saying that, you know, that you mentioned the eat chicken wing. So he says that that's an idiom in Malay. Bagi betis nak paha.
That's right.
So Andrew G also weighed in saying pok eye or jolok mata is his favorite. So, you know, the pok eye clothing.
Oh, I see. Okay. There's also eat, wind, wash eyes. What do you think?
Made
that
famous by Khairi Jamaluddin.
Yeah, so, makan angin, cuci mata, which means like going on a jaunt, I guess.
That's
is that
right.
What it means?
That's
okay.
Right.
And already bright still want to use torchlight, is it? Which I think comes from, we're guessing, from Terang Lagi Bersuluh.
I love Malaysian language. I love it.
Multiple languages. Okay, there we have it. Remember, you can keep those idiomatic expressions coming in. Tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. When you WhatsApp us, leave your name so that we know exactly who you are. We'll do a bit of a shout out to you. Now, time to look at a survey by Visa Inc. That says you could last 3 days without cash.
Yeah, wow. This is, I guess, a little eye-opening for me, but Malaysians are becoming increasingly confident about going cashless. 6 in 10 respondents of this survey said that they can do without cash for an entire day. And then when I thought about it, I thought, well, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. I can go without cash for an entire day too. But I guess it's also just a function of where I'm living, right? So, being in the city centre, I think it's a lot easier to go cashless. So, you know,
you could use plastic.
You could just
swipe. But
credit cards.
Well, in the context of going cashless, I've had lots of experience when I was a student. Actually, I went cashless because I had no money.
that wasn't my choice.
That's slightly different.
Forced cashless.
So here we're not talking about not purchasing anything.
That's right.
We're talking about purchasing things or transacting without the use of physical money.
Okay, that's right. So try and do that in, Sungai Pelet, for example. And,
Where's Sungai Pelet?
Exactly. Right, so you try
I should know this.
You try this. Actually, it's very near Sukinchan. It's a beautiful little town near the airport. But, I'd wager that most people down there do trade in cash, obviously. You're not going to go down to your local Kedai Runcit and swipe your credit card, are you?
Well, you know, this is very interesting. And I've mentioned this before because I was in India during the time.
Here we go with India. Demonetization.
Demonetization. And what I found was possible was actually to use my credit card, even for the simplest transactions. Like if I had a coffee at a normal kind of, you know, eatery. And so the amounts were very small, but I could use my credit card for that. You know, and I remember the days when you could only use your credit card for transactions, 50 ringgit and above.
I remember when I was a student, I had a little credit card and I didn't have cash in my wallet. And, you know, I wanted to have a 5 ringgit roti canai and coffee ice, but I couldn't afford that because I had no cash. So I was forced to go to a restaurant and pay the 30 ringgit for the minimum transaction limit. So it's got some interesting consequences, right? But in terms of this whole Indian demonetization thing, it's something that Mahathir was also talking about, right? Because with Narendra Modi, he did that to weed out the corrupt officials who had stacks of cash in their houses, right?
Absolutely. So the idea,
in this particular case, Mahathir is talking about the same thing.
Yeah, so the idea was that because of the nature of, especially illegal activities,
exactly.
That money is
stash of cash, yeah.
Right? So if you, unless you want your money to turn into worthless paper, what you'd be forced to do is to take it out somehow and put it back into the banking system.
In which case, then you'd be found out.
Then you'd be found out. So people would do all kinds of transactions. I mean, people who had a lot of cash were finding innovative ways to get their some value from that currency.
So it's kind of tried to get all this money back into the system.
Yeah, and clean it, right? Launder, well, not launder, but, you know, in the good sense, right?
Yeah,
cleanse it.
To cleanse it, yeah. Right. But the idea now is, I think, you know, if everyone is going cashless and the move towards cashless, everything will then, there will be a digital trail, digital footprint for everything.
So I think a lot of people don't realize this because, you know, on the one hand, it's very convenient. It's very easy, right? A lot of people don't realize the full ramifications of a cashless society in the sense
that...
And
what kind of ramifications?
Well, taxation, essentially. Mm-hmm. Every single thing about your financial lives will be known to the government. And if you have a government that is not responsible, well then, sorry, you know, every single thing that they do will be open to some kind of like tax or other.
And this is where Chuang heads for the hills.
but isn't that just part of functioning society that
not
you
really.
Pay your taxes?
Well, yes, if you have a government that is responsible and uses your taxes on productive means, but if it doesn't, like in the case of Uganda, which wants to tax social media, which we'll be talking about, then obviously, you know, it's the other way around.
Okay. And thank you, Fairuz.
Fairuz the
walrus. Okay. I don't know if that's a reference to your size, but clear waters doesn't mean there's no alligator. Tell me, what is the Malay expression
for
that?
The Malay expression is, air tenang jangan disangkakan tiada buaya.
Yeah.
Did I say that correctly? Okay. B. Ray, thank you also for tweeting in saying that she's been going cashless since 2015. There were days when she had to say no to her kids' snacks because there was a transaction limit.
Okay. We're coming up to the next Bulletin of the Morning. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.